Hello and welcome to ICMA's official podcast, Local Gov Life. I'm your host, Abbas Sabor. This season, our theme is Lessons to My Younger Self. That's the valuable things that our members have learned along the way that they wish they knew when they began. In today's episode, we're taking a look at volunteerism. We've all experienced the benefits of volunteering, even if we don't always realize it. With many of our listeners working in public service or nonprofits, we probably don't need to delve into the benefits of giving back, but today, we're going to be bringing you stories detailing the advantages of getting your residents involved in the community, how to make it productive without making it boring, and the benefit that just a little community service can have on a city of any size. Starting us off is Jeff Stonehill of Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Coming up on 25 years in local government management, Jeff knows a thing or two about the benefit of volunteering for the community. In this clip from our 2018 annual conference, he offers a bit of experience to aspiring managers. Let's hear what he has to say.
Citizen engagement is an important part of being a successful city manager. You can't operate a city organization unless you have strong volunteers who are committed to the mission of that organization. And that comes in a lot of different ways, but it's committees, it's commissions, it's special projects, it's using them in the vetting of planning and development. You really need to have those people in your community that are willing to give of themselves if you want your community to be a success. And as the city manager, my job is to motivate and facilitate citizen engagement. So yes, I've had great volunteers. Otherwise, I wouldn't be successful.
It's the passion of a volunteer that can really make a project pop. These residents care for the community they live in and want to build a network that supports them.
When we created a 501c3 to acquire and save a historic downtown theater from the wrecking ball, that only worked because we had citizens who were willing to give their time and energy to that new organization, to that friends of group. And you hear that term a lot, friends of this, friends of that. Those are citizens who are willing to give their time and their talent to some cause that helps make the community better. And we could never be successful in local government just doing it on our own. It requires those volunteers to take a project and make it successful.
In both the public and nonprofit sectors, a good volunteer can make the perfect partner in a winning tag team duo. Blair King, the city manager of Coronado, California, shares that sentiment.
Coronado especially has a lot of civic infrastructure, has a lot of service clubs, churches, traditional organizations. So we have a lot of volunteers because people want to participate. So we use volunteers and everything such as police volunteers, library volunteers, animal shelter volunteers. We have people that have organized themselves and provide volunteer rides through the city. We provide insurance for seniors. We call it out and about. But the thing that makes us unique, just isn't use of the city volunteers, is that the citizens themselves engage in indigenous activities to support the community, which the city then supports.
There are so many cool ways that volunteers and local governments can create the type of relationship that can last for years to come, sometimes even generations. Blair talks about a historic day Coronado had just last fall.
Coronado's zip code, and it's one zip code for the entire city, is 92118. September 21st, 18 just happened. There was a large event to celebrate Coronado, 92118 day. That was all volunteers, that was all the citizens, in a little bit, I think, different way in terms of us using citizens to deliver service. The city's responding to a large group of citizens, volunteers, saying, we want this event. So the citizens did everything from picking up, hanging door hangers, organizing the event, raising the money, and that's how we use citizens for that, and we have used them for other things like that.
So is it too early to RSVP? I doubt many of us are still going to be working 100 years from now, but some are retiring a lot sooner than others. In fact, an innovative program from a former city manager helped Springfield, Missouri retirees meet their perfect match. We're going to take a break and listen in on a conversation between Greg Burris of Give5 and Cora Scott of the City of Springfield as they discuss a cool idea that brings skills and service together. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Cora Scott, Director of Public Information and Civic Engagement for the City of Springfield, Missouri. Springfield is located in the heart of the Midwest. It's the third largest city in the state. Our population is about 169,000. That number, however, nearly doubles during the day, as we are a regional hub for economic, health, and service activity. Many of our social sector agencies serve a regional population of more than 1.2 million. I'm here with Greg Burris, Executive Director for Give 5, a civic matchmaking program. It was an idea hatched while he was still Springfield City Manager and is now under the umbrella of United Way of the Ozarks. Where did the idea for Give 5 come from?
Well, Corey, it kind of came from the fact that I'm a geek, and I'm fascinated by these macro trends that are impacting all of our communities, whether we realize it or not. But there are about five of them that I really focused on, and the Give 5 program is really at the intersection of all five of those.
What are those five macro trends that led to the creation?
Well, the first one is that, as we probably most of us know, 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 and retiring every day for 19 years, and we're in the middle of that transition. The fact that social isolation is on the rise, and especially among our senior population, we're seeing a lot of social isolation. The third is that there's a growing need for social capital, especially trust and empathy in our communities, and what community couldn't use more trust and empathy right now? Fourth, the growing importance of volunteerism in our communities, because we're seeing demands for services go up, so those nonprofits need more capacity. And then fifth, the largest transfer of wealth and knowledge in the history of the world is occurring right now. So some people have heard about the transfer of wealth, $30 trillion or more going to change hand over the next 30 years, but also the transfer of knowledge and the need to mentor younger people.
It's referred to as a civic matchmaking program. Can you explain that?
It's about romance, really. It's two sides of a ledger. It's finding the right fit for someone's passion to plug into their community and take some ownership of their community, find something that means a lot to them personally. So that may or may not align with their previous career. We may find accountants who go through the program, and instead of finding something in the financial world, they really find that they want to a hammer for Habitat for Humanity or mentor children or something completely separate from their career. So it's really this idea of matching skills and passions.
What would you describe as the central premise of the program?
The central premise is that down deep, people are good. And if you show people what's behind the curtain, you let them see their community, you let them take some ownership of their community, they can't unsee it. And they're going to want to help be part of the solution. We want the citizens to think of their community as if they own it and start to think that way and act that way. And so the Give 5 program really lets them jump in and be part of that solution. And everyone wants to be part of the solution.
Take us behind the scenes. How does the program work?
Well, there's five program days, and on the first program day, we do a pretty deep dive orientation into their own community. So we teach them about their own backyard. We have people who have lived in our community their entire lives. They learn a lot about their community, and especially people who are new to the community. It's kind of the new welcome wagon to the community. We then put them on a bus, and we take them to three nonprofits on the first day, and there are five program days in total. One day a week, and it can be structured any way, but we take them to five nonprofits on days 2, 3, 4, and 5. And so they really get a chance to see a variety of nonprofit volunteer opportunities, and we see it on their turf. So rather than bringing the nonprofits to us, we actually get in the bus and we go to those nonprofits and see what they're doing, talk to their staff, talk to their volunteers, and the participants really come away with a feel for what it would be like to volunteer there.
How are the nonprofits selected?
Any community can select any particular issue that they want to address, because in essence what we're doing is we're going to apply a whole bunch of talent within their community to a social issue. In our community, it's poverty. So we selected 23 nonprofits who are all aligned with initiatives that are addressing poverty. We actually have many more than 23, but we've selected 23 per class that really align with that particular social issue.
Give us an idea of how many people have participated so far. How many classes have you graduated?
Well, we have about to graduate our seventh class, and our eighth class is already filling up. So I think we have around 130 graduates by that point that will be out in the community. And these are highly skilled, highly motivated volunteers. We think of them as sort of Uber volunteers when they go out and get engaged, because they understand the why.
Is the program working? Would you consider it a success already?
I had a lot of high expectations for the program when we started. The program has exceeded those expectations. It's going even better than I thought. We hear back from the graduates on the impacts on their lives, which was something that I knew would probably happen, but I was surprised by the depth of the impact the program has on individuals. We hear back from the nonprofits and hear those stories of the benefits that the volunteers are providing to the nonprofits. We're really just creating fertile ground, and then we just kind of get the heck out of their way, and they take off and plug in and make a difference in the community. And some of them are even creating their own volunteer opportunities, because now that they've seen what's going on in their community and they understand the issues and how things interconnect, they're coming up with solutions themselves, and that's really gratifying.
What has surprised you about the program so far?
I think the thing that has maybe surprised me the most is the level of social isolation in our community. And social isolation, by its very definition, hides. You don't necessarily see it. But to have class members come into every class and self-identify during their introductions as isolating is really surprising to me, because these are people who had very vibrant, active lives when they were working full-time. But when we retire, we lose a part of our identity, and it's real easy to isolate socially. And we're social animals. Everyone needs to be needed. But it really doesn't matter whether you're an engineer, you're a banker, you're a CEO, you're a homemaker, you're a teacher, you're a professor. It doesn't discriminate. And I've been really surprised by the level of isolation.
You mentioned earlier that the program can be customized based on community needs. Can you explain a little bit more about how that occurs?
Yeah, it's completely customizable, it's scalable, and it's flexible. So it can be customized to address any social issue in a community. It can accommodate any class size, and it can have any number of program days. So it could be a small community, it could be a large community, it could be addressing poverty, it could be addressing some other issue that particular community selects. It's flexible. It can be implemented in an urban environment, a suburban or a rural community. It's completely scalable. So like I said, if it's a small community, a mid-sized community, or a large community, it can be implemented. So it's flexible, scalable, and customizable.
Thank you, Greg. As we're wrapping up, can you tell us how a community might, if they're interested, what might they do?
If they're interested in talking to us about the Give 5 program, go to give5program.org, and that's the number 5, so it's G-I-V-E-5, the number 5, program.org. And there's a link there to contact me, and I'd be glad to talk with anybody about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's truly incredible what's possible when communities find a time to come together. But caring for all reaches of our populations is no doubt a tall order. Pam Hilton is an ACM in Richmond Heights, Missouri. In this clip, she points out an added benefit of an active volunteer group.
I've worked in a couple of communities with very strong citizen boards and commissions, and having those citizens be involved allows them to really be ambassadors for your organization, because they can in turn go out into their neighborhoods, into the community, and talk about what is happening. They can help spread the word, share information, and in turn, we're able to get information back from them about what are residents thinking, what are they concerned about. It's such a great way to get kind of that man, woman on the street view of what is going on in the community, what is going on with our neighborhoods.
Who else can offer you a candid opinion of the community than the community themselves? Warren Bukota, a management fellow in Tacoma, Washington, reminds us that while we serve the community in our daily function, we are also a part of it and play a huge role in its cohesion.
I think it's really important that we hear from the people who may have some expertise or interest in certain boards and commissions. I think the challenge for most cities is if you can't get people on the board in the first place, how do you recruit them? And for Tacoma, I think our challenge is how do we get the people who are underrepresented on our boards and commissions? And I think it's very important to seek out those people that are in the underrepresented communities so that we can make sure we're hearing from everyone in the city and not just from those who always show up to the council meetings. We're still exploring that ourselves. I think personally what I try to do is with the neighborhood councils that I staff that are in those areas, I try to work with them and challenge them to get more people to the meetings. I live in some of the more underrepresented areas of the city now, so I try to tell my friends and my neighbors about meetings and when things are happening. just to try to help spread the message.
Keeping an open line of communication is important for establishing the type of dialogue that can lead to the most creative solutions. But be prepared. With more ways of communicating cropping up every single day, you may have to be a little creative with the way that you stay in touch.
A lot of the neighborhoods, even if they don't come to council meetings, they're always on Nextdoor, the neighborhood app. So I go onto the app every once in a while for my neighborhoods in the area and just share things every once in a while. If I see something that's a little off, I'll try to say, hey, you should look at, you know, the city's webpage or the county's webpage. Here's some information. And I'll help you guys if you need to. You can call me at work and I'll help guide you through this process.
Or you could try something a bit more conventional.
I take coffee meetings. I call them every once in a while. So I've had a lot of experience being able to talk with them and really hear from the community as I go out there.
Penny Ferguson, who was previously featured on our show and is the county manager in Johnston County, Kansas, chimes in.
Volunteers can bring you a fresh perspective. They are usually, if they're volunteering, typically very positive. And even if they're negative, it's good to have their volunteers and have that perspective. Because when they get involved, when they learn more about your government, they usually become ambassadors. They will say, oh, well, here's another perspective. I've learned about this. And they see that we are community-minded and want to do well. It can help leverage funding to have volunteers do it. And it also re-energizes you because you see, you get reminded people are care and they want to do well and they want to help the community do well. So it makes it more fun.
If there's one person who might agree, it would be the general manager of Norwood, Massachusetts, Tony Mazzucco.
When I was in the town of Adams, Massachusetts, I created something called the Adams Arts Advisory Board. And we created it as sort of a quasi-town board. And it was to try to get some artists in the community together and sort of focus some of the creative economy initiatives that were going on and find a way to kind of herd cats, if you will, because artists are always challenging to try to get together into anything organized. And what we're seeing in communities all over the country is that volunteering is changing, people's expectations in government are changing, and there's not as many people who want to serve on a traditional board or committee where they show up on every second Tuesday of the month and they approve their minutes and they vote yes, they vote no. People are looking for a way to be involved and active, but they want to have it be more of a volunteer experience. I'm always telling people when they say, I want to get involved in government, when a resident says that, I said, that's great. We've got our boards and committees, and if you want to make that commitment, you can do it. But joining a volunteer group, joining a civic group, your Masons, your Elks, your VFW, whatever you want to do, join them as well, because it helps build community and create connections in the community.
Those connections can introduce the most unique and inspirational aspect of any volunteer group. As residents' demand for services rise, so does some of the incredible ingenuity that makes our community so unique. Dennis Enslinger of Gaithersburg, Maryland, gives an example for the history books.
We also have the Book Festival, which is kind of a unique festival. We get a lot of kudos about it because it's similar to the National Book Festival. We'll bring in national authors to our community, and then that's really run by a small group of volunteers along with staff support. They pick the authors, they engage the authors, and then they also engage people to introduce the authors. And so, for instance, we have city staff do that. I've gotten to introduce some really great authors, so I read their book, and then you talk, you know, a little bit about them. And it's really more hands-on, one-on-one, and then there's a book signing. So we have a lot of events like that.
Volunteers' relationships with local government can definitely vary, but that doesn't mean you can't be proactive in reaching out to see what type of relationship can work for both parties. Once again, Tony Mazzucco.
And that's what we did with the Arts Advisory Board. By being a town entity, if you will, we were able to spend money on them, we were able to give them money for projects, we were able to work with them, but they didn't have to formally keep minutes, they didn't have to formally attend meetings, and it was more of a volunteer group that was associated with the town than a formal town board or committee. And at some point, I mean, they had dozens of members, they've done dozens of art projects in the community, so it's a way to really create volunteering, get people going and doing things for the community without just saying, join a board or committee where you're going to meet that every third Thursday and vote on an agenda or a minute. So harnessing volunteer groups like that makes a huge, huge difference. And finding ways to bring them into the community, into the city, and to help them out, to provide them with resources, that makes a huge difference because they end up being a great generator of projects and interest in the community. And they end up being a great labor force for different community events and other initiatives you're getting done. And it helps bring the community together. It helps create those community connections.
Thank you, everyone out there, for joining us for today's podcast. We hope you learned a little more about local gov life and the value volunteering brings to local governments. For the entire month of April, ICMA will be covering the topic of volunteering in so many cool ways. You'll have to check it out on our website. Go to icma.org/podcast to get this and our previous episodes and learn so much about what we're going to be doing for the month of April. For additional resources on volunteering and other issues that pertain to local government, subscribe to our newsletter, Leadership Matters. There you'll get a list of curated content sent straight to your inbox, and it's made specifically for local government leaders. Thank you again for listening. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and tune in next time. We'll see you later.